Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away, so it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's episode 90 coming right at you. You're from Bozeman, Montana.
You're doing that voice you do when you're stressed out.
Yeah, I'm stressed out, man. There's too much going on. Anyway, it's yesterday was my birthday. Happy birthday to me, Phil.
Yeah.
It's episode 90.
I'm happy for you.
I don't feel it.
Hmm.
Son of a bitch.
I'll try harder next time.
Anyway, this is a great episode. You're going to love it. We have Joe, J.D. Farinato, Meat Eaters community manager, man behind the emails, on the other end of the emails. Then we have Maggie Smith from our production team. She killed her first deer. And Joe shepherded her in that experience. And I like to hear first-time hunters relate, and she relates a pretty cool moment with her and the buck she killed before she pulled the trigger. So look forward to that. And then we have Bill and Andy from the Tailgate Podcast, Andy Anderson being one of my favorite photographers of all time. A bit of a legend in that space, and those guys have their own podcast talking about marketing in the outdoors, but for me it's a little bit bigger conversation than just marketing and selling people products. It's about how we market hunting to everyone. So I enjoyed those dudes, and I hope you will too. But before we get to that, Phil, do you shop on Black Friday?
You know what? I do.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Do you get up early? You wait in line?
No,
you buy a new iPhone?
So 2 years now, I have waited in line at Target after Thanksgiving to get those stocking stuffer deals. I've got two children and Sam.
You've bought two children at Target? That seems odd.
Yeah, well, you get them on Black Friday. It's like $6.99 a piece.
That seems like child trafficking. Now, episode 90. Enjoy.
I guess I grew up on an older road, a pedal to the metal, always did what I told. Till I found out that my brand new clothes are came secondhand from the rich kids next door. And I grew up fast, I guess I grew up mean. There's a thousand things inside my head I wish I ain't seen. And now I just wander through a real bad dream, feeling like I'm coming apart at the seams. But thank you, Jack Daniels. Oh, number seven.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 90. Is that right, Phil? 90?
That's what you told me.
I told you that. Now, we're talking about ASMR. Maggie, what is that?
ASMR, it's audio sensory.
I'll look it up. Hold on.
Something.
That's great.
But like for some people, it's kind of like a, I don't know, it's like a stimulant in your brain.
Really, yeah, like, you know, sometimes you hear certain sounds or that like kind of give you goosebumps a little bit.
Autonomous sensory meridian response.
Oh, I got it totally wrong. I
tried. Is an experience characterized by a static-like or tingling sensation on the skin that typically begins on the scalp and moves down to the back and neck and upper spine. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Uh-huh.
That's, yep. So you listen to
it's
somebody.
It's sort of like a, it's kind of like a fetish thing, but with like less connotation.
Sounds pretty sexual to me.
Yep.
A lot of people, it's crazy if you, there's so many different kinds of people get turned on auditorily.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go.
By different sounds.
Yep.
Like so it's in an auditorium?
It's people, sometimes it's people whispering or eating a certain food.
It's like whispering.
Oh, it's like this.
So what would be the ASMR for hunting? Like a bolt action rifle going back or like a an arrow, like dry firing a bow?
Dry firing would just make it.
You would just
like,
cringe,
like, oh no, oh no.
What are the sounds that we would do in the outdoors? Like just
like a bugle from like miles away.
Yeah, miles away bugle. Turkey gobble. That would get me. I would listen to that all day. Anything ASMR. This is not something I intended to talk about, but I think this is a good subject. So please write in to thc@themeatr.com with your ASMR hunting video ideas. Because Maggie was telling me up in the production space here at Meat Eater, it's been on the board.
We've been tossing the idea around.
It's been on the board.
It's on the ideas board. We'll see if it gets any traction.
If enough of you write in about it a thing, I'll forward them all to Ranella and it could happen. You never really know.
Could happen. It started as a joke, but now it's getting legs, so.
Yeah, it's getting ridiculous. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Ben.
How you doing, buddy?
Good. Hey. I'm a little, caught off guard with that previous conversation, but I'll be all right.
You're fine. You jumped right in.
Tried to.
Well, welcome. We got a couple things to get to, and then we're going to get to the story of Maggie's first deer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You excited?
Yeah.
I didn't feel like you had enough photos on your phone, like when you were telling the story in the office where you'd show photos. Do you have photos now on your phone?
Joe has a bunch of photos.
Because as a hunter, you got to have photos on your phone to illustrate.
Otherwise, it didn't happen.
Or it didn't happen.
You didn't have photos.
You got to have it. And so, Joe, did you send them?
I sent her some of my favorites.
Okay.
I haven't been able to go through all of them because I was taking all the photos. I was kind of hogging the story to make it my story. And I'm trying.
Joe's got a lot he's got a lot of issues. We're going to have to work through some of Joe's issues with this hunt because I hunted with Joe the day after that and he couldn't stop talking about it. I was a little bit concerned about his mental state. He's like, I could have shot the buck 20 times. And I just really, I was like, dude, it's fine. It's okay. That's us hunters.
I'm lucky to have shared the experience with him. Man. For sure.
And so before we get to that, we got a couple of dilemmas and then we got to get to a not so sharp moment. What do we do first, Phil? Dilemmas or not so sharp moments?
I want to hear about this dilemma you speak of.
Okay, this is a good dilemma. This is a real good. Joe, you forwarded this to me from the Meat Eater inbox. Joe is the keeper of the Meat Eater inbox, if you did not know.
Yep.
How many emails you got left to go through there, Joe?
Today, now I only have 74.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. I got 71 in the THC inbox, so if you haven't heard back from me, just wait. This is a guy wrote in. What's this guy's name? Why are people's names always hard to pronounce, Phil?
That's just you, man.
It's not me.
Nah, it's you.
This is his name. First name's Durrell. D-A-R-Y-L.
Can we take turns trying to pronounce his name?
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go with Radijak. You try, Maggie. I say Radijak. You try. What is it? What's that? At the very bottom of the email there.
Daryl.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Radijak.
Radijak. I'm sure Daryl's into this.
Sorry, Daryl. That was a
Give it
major
to us,
butcher.
Joe.
Daryl Radijak. I'd go with
I got that right. In your face, Phil. You thought I couldn't do it.
I feel like we might need to throw some sort of accent in there, though.
Radijak.
Yeah.
Something like that. Maybe, Daryl, you would write in and tell us where you're at. He's a former chief of wildlife for the Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency.
Wow.
So that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I did send you that one.
You sent me this one, right?
Yep.
So this guy said, to give you an idea of the issue, there's a video that he sent that was filmed of a kid in Tennessee, pretty young-looking fella, that shot a buck on the YouTubes. It's a nice buck. It's a really nice buck. It's at the 8-minute mark. There's a point that he asked us to watch, so I went and watched it. He starts by saying, to give you an idea of the issue, this was filmed a few days ago during the Tennessee muzzleloader season. There is a legal requirement for all hunters to be wearing Blaze Orange if you are not hunting on your own property. This boy was not. He seems like an amazing kid and giving thanks to God and to the landowner that gave him permission. Here's the problem. What do you do with this deer? I was the chief of wildlife for the state of Tennessee, and I'm puzzled as to what should be done. One can argue in favor of officer discretion and simply give the kid a warning for not having his arm joined and simply give the kid another chance. However, this being such a big deer, it will probably place well in the record books. But is this deer eligible for the record books since it is technically harvested illegally? It will receive a lot of slack if it is allowed. Right now, everyone on the internet forums is keeping quiet because they don't want to be that guy. And he goes on. I'm interested to hear what you guys would do. What the hell do you do about that? I think, man, I don't want to fly off the handle, Phil, but I think you should probably...
Do you want to explain what happened at that 8-minute mark a little
bit? Set an example.
More so?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we could just watch from the 8-minute mark. I mean, the kids, obviously, there's different cuts of the different parts of the hunt. And at the 8-minute mark, the kid is clearly not wearing his orange in the tree stand.
Is he wearing orange prior?
Hey, deer.
Huh. He's yelling at the deer at this point. Oh. So it's clear when he's hunting this deer, he's not wearing his orange. He's wearing an orange hat, but not an orange vest at the point where he shoots this deer. And so there's different other shots of the hunt where he is wearing an orange vest, but at the point that they show before he kills the deer, which he just did, and he starts freaking out.
Oh, my goodness.
Is that what I sounded like, Joe?
No, not at all.
Oh, my goodness.
You were so calm.
So, he shoots the deer.
Thank you, Lord. I got my orange right here, don't worry.
Oh. he even comments on it. Yeah.
So he knew.
That's, I mean, it's blatant. He shoots the deer, turns the camera to himself, and then
puts on
and admits, yeah, yeah. Basically admits the violation right there. It would be, if he didn't include that, I mean, he obviously edited the video, or someone did. They could have not included that, and he would have been just fine.
Or he could have just scrapped the video, which is, if I was in his shoes, that's probably what I would have done.
As a non-hunter, how often do you think this happens where it's just not documented like this guy documented his hunt? Like, probably all the time, right?
Oh, people wearing orange?
Yeah, I'm probably all the time. Listen, the time. I was in a situation earlier this year where I forgot my orange twice this year. I forgot orange on a hunt with Sam Lundgren when we were bear hunting, and I just put my rifle in the truck. I was like, I forgot my orange. I'm not going to walk around here with a rifle. So I just put my rifle back in the truck, and he put his orange on and took his rifle, and we went hunt. I mean, we drove an hour and a half, and I just didn't hunt that day because I screwed up and didn't have my orange. Mm-hmm. And so as someone who feels pretty strongly about those types of things, I would kind of fall along the lines of like make an example of this kid, as much as I feel what Daryl is feeling about, you know, it's like, just seems like a nice kid. He does, after he goes up to the deer, he says a little prayer. He thanks the landowner, as Daryl said. He seems like a really good, really honest kid. But man, increasingly violations are showing up on social media and places. And that's something. Get him, Joe.
He had his orange with him, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing where I'm kind of stuck. It's like he had it with him. He just wasn't wearing it. It was like hanging in the tree.
Yeah.
It's like the deer came in at a time where, like, he was just, like, taking off a jacket and taking off the orange or something, and he...
like my,
that's kind of what it seemed like to me. Like he just had
my first instinct would be like a fine or like some sort of strict warning. But to take the animal away sounds. That's pretty rough. I don't know.
But I mean, as I said, there's like the two sides of it. One side, this is going to become a famous, probably famous deer, even more famous now that we're talking about it.
Yeah.
So
kind of have to side with you, Ben, because also like social media, the more stuff is pervasive on there, then it's like, oh, that's okay. Yeah. Like that's fine.
If he just did this and the warden happened to catch him in some other way, you know, maybe, right? If he is out spot stalk hunting bears in Montana and happens to have his orange in his pack and not on his on his body, and he was like, "Do you have orange? Yeah, it's in my pack. Put it on."
Yeah,
like I don't want to see that again.
It's hard because he already. I mean, the video's out there. I mean, he put it out there, and that's like,
yeah,
drawing attention to his.
I mean, here he is.
You know.
Oh my goodness.
He's losing it. effort.
This is so hard.
Oh, you, and if you're, if you got any,
thank you. Like, I got my orange right here. Don't worry. He came in so early.
He starts putting on his vest and his hat. I mean, it's he knows, right? He knows. Yeah,
he knows he was in the wrong.
Right? But he still put it on the internet, right? So there's just like,
yeah,
I would lean this way, but I'm almost in this situation. Like, who am I to judge?
Yeah.
Like, I being someone who has filmed hunting and being around a bunch of people who make their careers that way, we know. Like, mm-hmm. we just know that anything that we do could be the end. There's people out there looking for it. Mm-hmm. And would happily applaud while we get taken down for something just like this. So yeah. I come from that angle where if you're going to do this, you gotta think everything you post online is a press release. Everything you post online is something very serious.
Yeah. And using firearms is not that's like a very serious thing, and safety should be, really, really important.
Yeah. And so it's just a thing that we have to think about, but mm-hmm. When Daryl says hell of an ethical dilemma, he's right. I mean, I'm sure wildlife officers and DNR agents and all these folks have to think about this all the time.
Yeah, I don't envy the person that has to.
I don't envy it either. All right, well, good luck to the YouTuber. Mm-hmm. Daryl, you do what you got to do, man.
Yeah.
I'll bow out of giving like a direct verdict because who the hell am I? But
you don't want to be the judge, jury, and executioner, Ben?
I don't. Not at all. Not at all. All right. Well, we got to get to a not-so-sharp moment, right, Phil?
Yes.
We've had a lot of poems. We've had a lot of... Last time we had... Boy, we had breasts.
We had balls.
Balls. This one has
the gamut.
And both of them involved very sharp things.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, mm-hmm. Play the jingle, Phil.
Work sharp, not so sharp moments, sharp so you don't have to be.
All right, this one comes from our new winner. His name is Brant Pearson. Fucking killed that one, Phil.
Awesome, way to go.
Thanks, man. Brant,
put it on the wall of fame.
Put it on the wall of fame, Brant Pearson. He says, about 4 years ago, I was hunting late afternoon for elk. I managed to come across a small legal bull and I took off after him. I happened to catch up, but got totally busted. As I shot, the bull took off running, and I just knew that my shot was a little far back. I found the blood trail and trailed him for about an hour after dark. I bumped the bull out of his bed and decided to go back out and rally my friends to find him first thing in the morning. If you hunted long enough, Joe, you've had this situation, I'm sure. I've had it.
Yep.
If you hunted long enough, you've had it. He says, in my group of friends, it is customary to all carry small shots of liquor to celebrate any of our successes when we have meat on the ground. We do this no matter if it's morning or night, but we aren't alcoholics, so don't judge. And he says, laugh out loud. Phil's eating fucking yogurt. Don't eat yogurt during not-so-sharp moments, Phil.
It's breakfast, man.
Unbelievable. I happened to grab 2 travel shots of Fireball. Woo! That's
a while.
Yeah,
it's a bold move.
My friend Zane and I. Of course, your friend is named Zane. No friend named Zane is gonna stop you from drinking Fireball.
And they're not alcoholics.
Yeah. Zane and Brant.
Zane Brant, just putting down Fireball in the mountains. My friend Zane and I downed them as we hugged and celebrated when we finally found the bull. Back to the shot placement. After we finished the cinnamon whiskey, I began to cut the bull open. Yes, I did nick the gut. At first, I was muscling through the stench of rotten belly. But over a few minutes, it was getting to me. By now, 2 other friends had joined, as well as my oldest daughter. They were laughing at me as I slowly started to gag. Can you give me a gag noise?
Like live right now?
Yeah. That. Oh, God, Jesus. Don't throw up your yogurt.
Yeah.
Hey, easy there, Phil.
Careful.
Apparently, my gag reflex started to evoke my friend Zane's gag reflex as well. You know how that goes. He and I still had the taste of cinnamon whiskey in our mouths. Oof. The taste and smell doesn't mix well and with rotten guts, I guess. I ran one direction to throw up, and he ran the other. This lasted approximately 5 minutes as we were doing a vomiting version of dueling banjos.
That image is never not funny of people, just the chain puke reaction. Like it was a bit on Family Guy and The Office. Oh, it's just like it's so good. Hilarious.
It's so good.
We had a crowd between he and I that laughed as hard as I've ever seen anyone laugh. Needless to say, my daughter and friends won't ever let me live it down, and I cannot drink cinnamon whiskey anymore. Yuck.
Yuck.
Brandt. If you were my friend, I wouldn't let you live it down either.
Brandt Pearson. Play the jingle, Phil.
Work sharp, not so sharp moments, sharp so you don't have to be.
All right, Brandt, thanks to Work Sharp, you're going to get yourself a Work Sharp field sharpener for all your terrible cinnamon vomit that you spewed upon the landscape.
Whew.
So 4 years ago.
Doesn't make me want to drink Fireball ever again.
And that's a perfect transition to your hunt, Maggie, somehow.
It's such a similar experience, actually.
So, Maggie, you're now a little bit famous for being on a season, the last season of Meat Eater on Netflix.
Just a little bit.
I think it's the best episode. I finished the last of all the episodes last night, but I think your episode is the best.
Well, thanks, Ben.
I truly do believe that. So you could tell us, like, go there, watch that Netflix episode. Do we know what it's called? It's the turkey hunting episode.
I think it's Turkey Troubles.
Turkey Troubles.
Yeah.
Go watch that. That was your first hunting experience, correct?
Yes.
Damn. To be have your first hunting experience be with Yanni and Steve and be filmed for Netflix. And I don't want to spoil it, but you didn't get a turkey.
Mm-hmm.
To have that be your, like, first hunting experience, that's not normal, number one, and maybe it possibly traumatic.
It's
some
lot.
Other levels. It's a lot, right?
People
are
a lot.
Millions of people are now going to watch you on your first hunting experience.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a mind fuck.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now we're going to get to where it turns about. And that's thanks to one Joe.
Mm-hmm.
What's your middle name? Farinato. What's your middle name?
Daniel.
Yeah. I like that. Joe Dan.
Joe Dan.
And people call me JD frequently.
Never heard it. But I like it. I like it. So, Maggie, tell us about this hunt. This was last weekend, correct?
Yeah. Well, Joe invited me to go out for my first deer hunt. We left on Friday night.
Yep.
To go to the breaks, and it was a muddy, windy night.
Yeah. So, like, the Missouri breaks being this unforgiving, wild landscape that I would say I personally have wanted to go and hunt and kill a mule deer, elk, or what, it doesn't really matter, on free for my whole life. If you put, like, my dream scenario hunts, that would be one of them. So you get so lucky as to be accompanied by JD Farinato over here up north to the breaks. It was muddy and cold.
Muddy, windy, cold. We couldn't get to the spot I wanted to camp. Actually blew a shock out on my truck.
Oh,
I didn't know that happened. Because
it was so nasty. And then we ended up setting up camp with a Seek Outside teepee on a very open, exposed, like, high point where it wasn't muddy, to just listen to the tent just get beat by the wind all night long. And
I was already nervous, and then that happening, a little bit of a rough night of sleep, for sure. Just nerves, and then wind just ripping through the breaks. But,
yeah,
we got up early the next day, and...
Now, do you have any expectations of, like, the kind of deer you wanted to shoot, nerves about rifle? Like, I'm sure a lot of people that are either going to take first-time hunters or even could be first-time hunters soon themselves listening to this, so it'd be nice to, like, get your emotional state.
Yeah. I mean, nerves kind of about all of it. We went to the shooting range on Tuesday before we left on Friday, and that was the second time I'd ever shot a rifle. So that was, you know, going out there then on Saturday morning.
Man.
You know, it was, I felt, had practice, but not as trained and confident maybe as I wanted to be. So that was a nerve-wracking thing. And then just everything. I mean, it's so new to me. It's not a camping trip. It's totally different. Your brain's just always moving in a million directions when you think, I don't know, don't know what the scenario is going to be.
Oh, man. And Joe, how are you feeling as the mentor? /guide/
I think I did a good job of hiding.
I was feeling awful.
Cleaner upper. You're feeling awful.
I was feeling absolutely.
Oh, yeah. You were puking.
On the way out, I got terribly sick. And, like, had to pull over and vomit. So it was just turning into a wonderful, wonderful trip so far. And I was feeling really bad because, like, I knew no one slept in the tent, and it was just turning into a less than perfect experience for her first hunt.
When stuff like that starts to happen, do you think like, oh, let's just turn it around, or you still try to keep a positive attitude, like it's okay, I'll fight through this and we'll make it great?
I try and stay super positive and fight through it. I'm very much a look on the bright side type of guy.
I'd agree with that for sure.
But
you got to. That's what hunting's all about.
Your calmness then made all of my nerves a lot more.
Yeah, hunting is all about overcoming those things. No. Right, because there's there's a lot of times. I mean, Joe and I have hunted a couple times this year where it's like, we should probably go home. It's snowing. You know, like you can choose. A lot of times I do choose that because I owe my family as much time as possible. But the more successful hunters, the ones like, nope, screw it. I'm here to do this, and I'm not
cold,
leaving.
Miserable.
I'm not leaving until it's done. I'm not leaving until it's done.
I feel like discomfort and hunting kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, and hardships and just weird things happening because you're out in these like unpredictable places with a lot. Like it's the as Steven would say, the arena of consequence. Mm-hmm. And so everything you do has consequences. You know? Yeah. And so likely profound. I heard that on the Netflix show Meat Eater last night when I was watching it. Having a meat eater whiskey. anyway, so you guys seeing deer like right off the bat, or was there some dead zone?
Saw a lot of antelope at first. So the place I wanted to get to was pretty far in down this dirt road that we couldn't get down because it turned into just a mud road. And
I was very impressed by Joe's driving, by the way. It was outstanding in that mud.
I was really surprised we didn't get stuck. But I was keeping that cool demeanor. Like, yeah, I got this. You know, got this.
I had my eyes closed in the back and was holding on to the handle. It's okay.
One hand on the wheel, just like, yeah, no problem. No problem at all.
Yeah. He was texting and driving. Watching Netflix season eight.
Pass me the coffee.
Exactly.
Pour me a cup.
No, so we ended up having to hike from the main highway back towards where I wanted to be. And I knew it was going to be probably, you know, a couple miles before we would start seeing anything. And we got in there. There's lots of antelope running around on the super open, flat, prairie-looking stuff. And then we got a couple miles in, and it started turning into this, you know, that more iconic breaks, Badland-style country with lots of cuts and stuff in the terrain. And then we started seeing some deer.
Oh, man.
It was beautiful out there. That sunrise was... You know, the sunrise around the mountains is pretty, but being able to see for forever was like...
Hey, Phil, can you add in some of those, like, Remy Warren sound effects of, like, birds and stuff right now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Oh, wow. And then what happened?
I feel like I'm there.
I think at, like, 9:30?
Yeah, 9:30. I was kind of explaining to Maggie as you start to crest ridges and stuff, you move very slowly and don't just go right up to top and skyline yourself because you'll blow animals out, and just kind of look as you're going up, move really slow, make sure there's nothing on that slope past.
Or you do what I do. You do go very slowly right to the crest of a hill, and then you pop up real quick.
But I peeked my head up over, like, right as I was explaining that, and I was like, because there's situations like this where there's a giant deer standing on that slope over there.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that was unexpected.
This is a big, big giant buck. This is a fat, big fat buck. Like, it's a nice, nice mule deer buck. It's nice.
He was a stud.
How far away is he when you creeped up and you popped up and he was there?
And I popped up real fast. I was right there. He was probably 600 yards.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So you got a little bit of, you got to cut the distance.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Subscribe. And I listen to a lot of Remy's podcast.
Yeah, please subscribe to Remy Warren's Cutting Distance podcast on iTunes. Keep going, Joe.
Nice plug.
Yeah, no, I'm good at it. I'm the best at the best in the company.
But yeah, so I poked my head up and I could see this deer, and there's a few does and a couple of smaller bucks too. And I told Maggie, I was like, we want to peek up and take a look. And she slowly worked her way up. She's like, I can't see him. So I gave her my binos and she started looking and she got really excited. Just turned around, like, what do you think of that? And she's just like wide-eyed, nodding her head. She's
my
like,
facial
expressions like that.
Aren't
I'll
quiet.
Take it.
Yeah. She's like, I'll take that one. Put that one in the bag for
I'll
me.
Take
Thank
that
you.
One and that. I don't want that one, but I do want that one.
So I kind of made a plan. They were working up this draw, and I was like, we'll come back down. We'll move around so we're completely out of sight while we're moving the, you know, majority of the distance. We should be able to get into a spot where we're probably within 300 yards without really having to put a lot of effort into the stock. And she was like, okay, let's do it. I'm just going to follow you exactly, do exactly what you tell me to do. And we did great. We got into that spot and started watching these deer, and they were moving towards us. So when we got to them, they're about 280. And point number one where I could have shot that deer.
This is all, the whole story I got was like, I could have shot him there. I could have shot him right there.
But, and I thought they were going to work in perfectly. So I got Maggie all set up, ready to go, waiting for that, you know, 150-yard shot. And this buck did exactly what big mule deer bucks like to do, grabbed his does and switched directions and ran off.
Pew!
Yeah.
Well, I like that sound effects.
Pew, pew. Yeah, he was just...
I thought you might have shot at him. Pew, yeah, pew,
no.
Pew!
Nope.
No, he ran away.
I was like, well, that's no fun. Why'd he do that?
And honestly, then that moment, I was a little like...
Heartbroken?
Heartbroken, but also like... Honestly, a little sigh of relief because I didn't feel as prepared in that moment because we kind of just saw him. It was so fast. We were setting up, and I was like, never been prone position before. It was totally brand new. So, I mean, I was sad, but also like, whoa, wow. Yeah.
That moment was probably the funniest moment of the hunt, too, because there was a forky standing pretty close to us, well within range.
And you were like, shoot him so I can shoot that other one.
I looked at Maggie. And I wasn't really even thinking about telling her to shoot it or anything. And I look over at her just because I wanted to make sure that, you know, if she wasn't going to be picky on the hunt, like, you know, she could shoot this deer, you know, first deer, it'd be an awesome experience. And I look over at her and I go, do you want to shoot that deer? And she looks back at me and she's like, not today, maybe tomorrow, like last hour.
Yeah, that's a veteran move.
And I was like, all right, I like it.
Is there an official definition of a forky? I'm guessing it's like a smaller.
It's a
2 points.
2 points.
Yeah. 4 point total.
Two points each side.
Okay, two forks. I ran into a guy that called it a slingshot deer because you could make a slingshot out of either side.
I like that description.
I thought that was clever.
He definitely could make a slingshot. Yeah.
He's got a couple of slingshots. I'm like, what?
A couple of slingshots.
This deer has slingshots? I'm not going to hunt it.
Like, is he fighting back?
He deserves to live. it's learned
just
to think.
Just imagining like a completely wild deer that like has decked out slingshots somehow.
He's learned to reason and build things.
Another deer jumps up and starts shooting
with his antlers.
Yeah. I'm glad you guys are into it because that's what I'm like. Oh, I have a child's mind, so I'm like, oh, good. That's hilarious.
I think all have child's mind.
Continue.
Yep.
So yeah, that deer ran off, and
just
I watched
wasn't good
him.
Enough at that point. You know,
yeah, trophy hunter.
Yeah. Watched him go away. We waited for that forky to get out of sight so we didn't spook it and run it down into the other ones and push them all out. And we ended up having to go back around to where we initially saw the deer because they moved down this draw. And I saw this buck bed down like really deep in this coulee. And I was like, all right, we'll go all the way back around and we'll work in on them and we'll see if we could see them. And that took, you know, probably 25-ish minutes to get back around into a spot where we could really start trying to find him and make a plan to make a stalk. And I don't really know what was going through Maggie's head here because I was just one track mind. I was like, this deer needs to come home with us. Like, I don't care who shoots it. Like, we are not letting this deer get away. I was just kind of one track mind going, and Maggie was doing great following me. I'd look back every once in a while and make sure she was still there, of course.
It's funny
didn't get consumed by the mud.
Yeah. And that pressure, though, it's like everything that you know, just like to me, it was just like out, like drained out of my head. I was like, I don't even know what to do anymore. Like, it was like I could not.
Yeah.
I was going through a lot.
It's like me
moment.
When if I'm playing pickup basketball and somebody passes me the ball and I'm wide open.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Do I pass it back to this person? They clearly gave it to me for some reason. Yeah. And I know I'm not going to get it in the hoop no matter what I do.
Yeah. It was like I had a personal little discussion with myself, just mind be quiet, body just go, like keep doing it. Like, you know, and no. Joe's going to be right there. You're totally fine.
He's like, I can shoot it if you don't want to shoot it.
I can shoot it. It's okay.
Yeah.
If you can't do it, I got this.
I'm right there. It's 80 yards away.
It's funny, though, how you know stuff and then your brain just all of a sudden is just like freaks out on you.
Yeah. Oh, it's like I think every hunter goes through that. And if you stop going through that, like you start, I get a little bit calm. But then when I mess up, I start that. And I had this mule deer I shot at recently. I missed it a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. And I'm like totally calm, not even nervous. Like, oh, here we go. See ya. Boom. Yeah. Oh, what?
Yeah.
Anybody?
Why didn't that happen?
Boom. Oh, anybody? And then I started freaking out. I'm like, what is happening here? And then you lose it.
Yeah.
So you can, even a false sense of security in regards to this stuff can be a killer.
Totally. And I wanted to, didn't want to let my nerves show too much, but.
You did a great job of that.
She
seemed calm and collected the whole time, which was
so you felt good.
Great.
Flicked off the safety. Got a good shot. No rush.
No rush. We sat there for like an hour and a half.
Yeah, we sat on that deer for a long time. So when we finally moved in on him, it took some time to find him because he had dropped down lower in this coulee. And I caught antler tips a couple times and he was moving around. And from where we were the first time when we set up, we were about 120 yards. And I was like, well, let's sneak around here, see if we get closer, see if we get a better view of this whole coulee here. And she's like, okay, we moved in and we get her laid down on this flat spot and I could see the antler tips of this buck and he was 84 yards away, just passed out, dead asleep. And I was like, perfect.
We're He's doing that jerk asleep, like falling asleep and then jerking up. Oh,
jerking
and falling asleep. Yeah. Oh. Jerking up.
That's what Phil's doing right now, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, this.
What was that? Workshop moment?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll play the jingle.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth. After 3 years of work, our follow-up to the Meat Eater Fish and Game Cookbook is here. It's the Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, campfire, and camp stove. Here is your book for everything that's best cooked or eaten outside, from grilling to open fire cooking to Dutch ovens to smokers to barbecue to backpacking meals to how to pull off the perfect fish fry, with pit stops along the way for lessons about ice age cooking methods and the best 5 ways to construct a cooking fire you can be proud of. And of course, we're focusing on wild game and fish here with over 100 recipes, including stuffed venison burgers 3 ways, wild duck with aji verde sauce, a jerky made with cola, a gin and tonic made with fire charred lemons, and grilled frog legs made with a sticky sweet sauce. This ain't your normal cookbook, so be prepared to be surprised. Get your copy now. For more info, visit themeateater.com or buy it wherever books are sold.
But yeah, so we get her all set up, and the whole time laying there, you know how impatient I am sitting on bucks.
Ben. Yeah, we had a similar situation earlier this year.
I was grateful for the amount of time, knowing that he had bedded down and was like, that's like sleeping. Yeah. For me,
you
it
get
was
to
like,
process it in your mind, right? This is going to happen at some point.
Yes, and yep. I couldn't have had it better. Like, I didn't feel rushed. Like, with the turkey, it was like, you didn't know he was coming, and so I still felt rushed and didn't feel, like, prepared. I didn't know where he was, and, like, this was, like, got my actual eyes on him. Then I got the scope, knowing right where he was.
That's a big thing with ethics, right? We tell people to be thoughtful, or you want to be thoughtful about mm-hmm. the situation, but when something comes up and you're not expecting, you don't have time to be like, listen, is he, oh, he's 30, 40.
Yeah.
You just don't have that time. So you're, as much as you want to be thoughtful and ethical in those situations, like, you just got to do it.
Yeah, yeah, and turkey was hunting turkeys was the only thing I knew at this point. So this was a totally different scene.
But, totally different experience.
All right, now the shot comes. Give us the dope, Maggie.
Well, I spooked him, made him jerk awake.
Oh.
Yeah, it was the funniest thing, because I was moving around trying to find her a position where she could get the crosshairs on the deer while it was laying down, just so she could be comfortable and know where she's aiming and everything. And we just couldn't make that happen because of the way he was laying. We had to wait for him to stand up. And I'm moving around for the last hour and a half, finding different positions.
Yeah, I was so surprised he didn't like.
And I finally just go, okay, Maggie, you're going to have to wait for him to stand up until you could even put the crosshairs on him. And when he stands up, you're just going to pick that point right behind his shoulder and squeeze the trigger. And she's like, okay, sounds good. And she goes to adjust the scarf on her head. And just that hand movement, that deer like whips his head over. She's like, bingo, gotcha. I was like, okay, that's stupid. I've been crawling around this whole time. But I leaned in. I was like, he saw you. He's getting up.
Oh, man. That was a moment.
He's staring right at us, perfectly broadside. And I said, okay, he's up. And I put my fingers in my ear. I was like, whenever you're ready. And just stare at the deer. I was like, okay, should happen any time now. Any second. And it just wasn't happening. And I leaned in and I whispered, I was like, can you see him? She's like, she just nodded her head. She's like, yep, it's him. I was like, okay, whenever you're ready.
Yeah, you said if you feel comfortable.
Pull the trigger.
But I couldn't see. Even when he stood up, there was sage obstructing his body, which was a dilemma in my head for me still. I was like, I want to place my shot correctly. But also looking at him was like, we also had a moment.
Oh.
I feel like, you know?
Are you going to call him back?
Yeah. Well, he's in my shed, so I can go visit him.
Yeah. Well, this is getting really weird now, everybody.
No,
all
but
right,
like,
next time.
As opposed to like not having him know, I feel like he knew. That was like I couldn't have asked for a better scenario. Like him looking at me, I don't know. It was like we had a moment, like he knew. And then I felt comfortable after Joe said that.
Really cool. There's like things like that as veteran hunters that you just don't think of.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to be, you're not desensitized to it, but there's a functionality in like, got to get that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're just not, you're not thinking in those ways.
Yeah.
And so
wanted a good, clean, safe shot. So
perfect double on shot. Deer didn't take a step.
Right down. It's awesome.
Which I was so grateful for, just because I could not see that spot that I wanted to, you know.
All right, so here's a question I have. Most new hunters I've taken, like, it's the walking up to the animal that is the most emotional. Is that for you? I've had a couple where, like, the animal's still twitching, and it's like, shoot it again.
Yeah.
Those kind of moments, like, where did that land for you?
I honestly, the most emotional part was, like, looking through the scope and having him stare at me.
Yeah.
That was the most emotional part, I think, for me. And that's the part I keep reliving. I relived it quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I honestly wouldn't have had it any other way, because I liked that he knew more so than just, like, picking him off when he was just hanging out, going about his business.
He's like, wow.
Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense, but that acknowledgement from him was calming.
That makes a lot of sense. Have you eaten any of this buck yet?
No, we're processing him tonight. Ooh. Seth's helping, Joe's helping.
The flip-flop flesher.
Yeah.
JD Farinato, get it done. Well, yep. You'll be able to further process this when you're eating him, right?
Mm-hmm.
To go through the transformation process of him being on his feet and being able to look him in the eye and kind of have that moment with him, and then like watch the transformation from he's a quarter on your pack, he's in the truck. Now he's a hamburger that you helped grind, and then now you're eating him. Like, I'm sure you'll think of all those moments. It's all kind of intertwined, and it'll be powerful. So we'll have to hear back from you when you get to experience that.
Well, thank you.
I think that's very important. What do you think, Joe?
I think that is a very, very important part of it. I'm excited to help her process it and take those steps into eating them.
Well, congrats, Mary Mags.
Thank you.
You're awesome.
Couldn't be more grateful for the community here.
Look out for the next episode of Get Toasted.
Woohoo.
You're editing it right now. She's the creative mind behind it. Renella's just kind of like...
Annie. Annie's also the creative mind behind it.
Annie and Maggie are like, who makes Steve look good? You know what I'm saying? Good thing he doesn't listen to this. all right. Now we're going to get to the great and powerful, one of the best photographers on planet Earth, Andy Anderson. Enjoy that.
Thank you.
I guess I grew up on an older road, a pedal to the metal.
All right. Hey, guys.
Hey, how are you?
Hey,
how
you doing? You guys have a podcast about marketing.
That's what we do.
And the outdoors. And that, to me, having been a marketer and a content creator and all these things, and you guys also have some great guests, including Simon Roosevelt, Tom McQueen, and you can go on from there. That's all you really need to know. You don't need to know any other guests that you've had. Those exactly. two right there.
Right.
You can start with us. Introduce yourselves for us.
Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, Bill Roden. I have about 25 years in the advertising industry, working to a large extent on the automotive side of things. I've done a lot of work in the general outdoor space, like Patagonia, North Face, and Nike, and all those brands. But I've been doing it for a good long while and still love it.
Yeah. Still love it. My name is Andy Anderson. I'm a photographer. Been a photographer for about 30 years. I started as a fishing photographer many, many, many moons ago and kind of got a little disenfranchised with it, you know, visually. So I became a commercial photographer, and that's kind of what I do now. And I love the outdoors. That's me, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I was just watching last night, knowing that you were coming in, the film Andy. That it was during my time at Yeti. That was like a Yeti Orvis film. So if you want to know about Andy, that's a good thing to go watch. About 7 minutes. It's good. It talks about your creativity and your storytelling. And for my money, and I've thought this for years, you may be the best, if not one of the best out there.
That's awful nice to say that.
Telling stories through images. So we can just start like that.
And, thank you.
When you reached out to me about the Tailgate podcast, and you guys, this is pretty new, right? You got five episodes in?
Yeah, 2 months in.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, welcome to the weird, wild world of podcasts. Talking to it on microphone.
Exactly.
For hours.
Just don't know what to do with our hands.
Yeah,
right
we don't, I don't.
Where do I look?
Where do I go?
Yeah.
People like
I don't want to look at Andy.
Yeah, just look at Phil. Phil's everybody's comfort blanket.
He's got nice hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks. Hopefully it stays that way.
Yeah, enjoy it while you have it, buddy.
Yeah. Phil's really the looker of the show. One thing I do think when I'm thinking about like what you guys have chosen to do, you know, being in marketing forever and you have being, I really would say, more of a storyteller than a photographer. I mean, if anybody wants to look up Andy's images, I was just looking at him last night, andyandersonphoto.com. You can kind of see some of what I would just call straight out art and capturing people's emotions and their lives and what they're all about through just an image. So I definitely want to talk about that before we get to anything else. And how would you describe like your style of photography, the way that you approach these things?
Gosh.
Instagram filters?
Yeah, a lot of Instagram filters.
man. Sepia tones?
Well, I do a lot of reading. You know, I'm very curious. And I've often said, you know, to young photographers, you know, the curiosity is the engine to your creativity, right? If you're not curious, you're not going to be creative, no matter what it is, right? And I think that I try to have a lot of things that influence my, you know, my photography. I don't literally look at a bunch of other photographers. I look at a lot of art, paintings and stuff, because it was a very deliberate attempt to do something with light and, you know, color. And it was very intentional when the painter did that. So to me, I understand that. I look at that. So that's a great tool for me. As far as approach, I mean, other than that, I live in a very, very small town in Idaho. And I've kind of been left to my own devices, not a lot of other extraneous, you know, I think a lot of problems with photographers in big cities, and it's inevitable to happen, is that photographers are always looking at the other guy down the road and seeing how successful he is, and, well, I'm going to do what he's doing, right? So the work becomes very homogenized. You know, like, for instance, in Austin, you have Dan Winter. Now, there's nobody else that does it better than Dan Winter, right?
Yeah.
And there is some people that try to, you know, copy that. And I think that because they see that he's successful instead of just marching to their own drum, right?
Yeah.
And for me, living in a small town in Idaho, I didn't have anything else, right? So I kind of embraced what was around me visually and just kind of went from there.
Yeah, that's more like a micro influence rather than the macro. Like
exactly.
You didn't see what's all out there.
Right. So
I like that.
I made a lot of mistakes.
In your website, it's 10 things about Andy. One of them says you drink wine with ice.
Absolutely.
What's up with that?
Yeah.
So, you had to bring that up, right?
Yeah, this is good.
I'm just going with the
We're getting to the hard questions.
I'm just
Andy.
Going to the material given.
Yeah, here we go. So, about 20 years ago, I was the first staff photographer at Men's Journal. And one of the tasks that I got tasked to was it was Hemingway's 100th anniversary. So I went up to catch him and photograph Jack Hemingway. And we spent 2 or 3 days on the river. And every night we come back to his house. And he spent a lot of time in Spain. And in Idaho, there's a huge Basque influence, you know, in Idaho. So he said, "You want a glass of wine?" And he started putting ice in it. Like, what the hell is this shit, right? And he goes, "Well, try it." And it's called a culimocho, right? Which is Coke in wine or sangria. But, you know, I've always kind of liked it with ice. Since then. So that's kind of how it started.
Well, that's a good way of being like, Hemingway.
Yeah.
Hemingway told me this.
Like, yeah.
I can do it.
I mean, it's Andy's breakfast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wine for breakfast. We should have had wine with ice in the studio.
Wine with ice for breakfast, yes.
Yeah, sorry.
Phil, get there's out. Actually a few people that I know. That's
the Meat Eater branded iced wine.
Yeah, Meat Eater. That's a good idea. Right. See, this is a marketing guy. Yeah, we got a marketing guy.
Yeah, it doesn't have an off switch.
It doesn't stop.
Yeah, it doesn't stop. Yeah.
He's always thinking. There's jobs. I think that another thing that people should know, and when they start looking at your photography, they'll know that you've traveled around the world probably twice, and you've met some of the most interesting people. So we can't go any further without getting like a couple of your top stories of your travels and crazy shit that's happened. Or
I've got a few, but one of the more infamous ones that I've had, I was in Cuba before you were allowed to go to Cuba. I was shooting, I went down there to photograph baseball players, you know, the Cuban baseball players that left after the revolution that came back to Cuba. And while we were there, there was this whole culture of like transvestites that lived down there, and they always were on Embassy Row, right? So I had a fixer that was with me, a Cuban fixer, and we'd drive around taking pictures at night, like on the Malecón and stuff like that. And I saw these two people. And they were transvestites. And I said, well, God, that would be interesting just to photograph them, because I just think they're interesting, right? And so we got them in the car. We drove around and we took them out of their area that they were supposed to be in. Because apparently in Cuba, if you don't have papers to be in one area, you're illegal, right? So, and knowing that this was probably something was going to happen that night, and this was the last night I was going to be in Cuba, I was prepared. So I stuck another card in my pocket in case I got stopped. So what happened is we get the people out, we're photographing them. I shoot about 5 frames and the police car pulls up, you know, and it's like, okay, how am I going to talk myself out of this one? Right. And the guy comes up to me and he goes, what are you guys doing? And I said, well, I was just getting ready to take a picture. And while he was coming up, I had thrown the other card in there and he saw it, but he goes, no, you need to come with us to the police station. Yeah, and to my head, in my head, I'm like, my wife that I've been married to for 40 years is like, how am I going to explain this one to her?
Right? I got caught in Cuba photographing transvestites.
Right, right. So we get down to the police station. I'm just, you know, freaking out. And my producer and my fixer and my assistant were kind of like, what's going on here? So we sat there for about an hour. And finally, the fixer went in and talked to somebody. And they go, well, they said, you can take off. So that was kind of one thing that happened. So nothing really happened, but I was freaking out.
Yeah, there's a singular moment there when you're in the back of the police. You're like, oh, yeah. Policia.
Yeah, exactly.
What am I going to do?
And I guess, let's talk about the one that I had another. I did a story for Men's Journal. This is another Men's Journal story, but I was shooting the Robbie Gordon in the Baja 1000. So I was with Red Bull. They had driven us down there to do it. And we had to ride with them in a minivan. So long story short, I get in a helicopter and we're shooting all these, you know, Robbie going across the desert in the Baja. And so I had already shot a bunch of pictures and I'd given them to the Red Bull guys and my assistant, because we can only put one person in the helicopter. And I gave them all this exposed film that I'd shot. So long story short, I land in Baja. They can't fly at dark. So I hailed a taxi, and I drove 400 miles at 8 o'clock in the evening back to Ensenada, where the start of the the 1,000 was. So I get there and show up in the, at the finish line, and nothing's really going on. So I go back to my room. Next morning, I get woke up, and he goes, one guy from Red Bull goes, hey, listen, they broke into the minivan and they took everything. I go, so in my head, I'm just waking up and said, well, camera gear, I can replace that. Wait a minute, all the film, right? And the film's way more important than the camera gear. If you're not losing camera gear, you're not working, right? Yeah,
right.
Just not.
Time.
You're not working. So I go out to the minivan and it's like, well, nobody broke into it. They left it unlocked. So this is on a Sunday afternoon in Ensenada. So my assistant, Matthew Turley, went in there because he knows, you know, Spanish fluently. And I said, let's go in and talk to these guys and see if we can figure out what, you know, get our money back or get our stuff back and or do something. And they were like, unless you pay us money, we're not going to help you. So long story short, I never got my camera gear, and Red Bull had to end up redoing the shoot.
The whole thing.
The whole thing.
So, the Baja 1000.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking now, and I was looking last night, too, at just all the portraits that you've taken over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, some of the most compelling images that I've ever seen. I remember seeing some of this when I was working at a Jim Harrison shot you did,
mm-hmm.
of him just head down smoking mm-hmm. a cigarette. And that's, I think, the first image I've ever seen of yours. And I said, who the hell did that? And they started rolling out, the guys at Yeti started rolling out all these other photos and stuff that they had used of years in the past. And like, that is unbelievable. Can you talk about that photo?
Oh, God, like, that's a great story.
General, like any portraits, but that's the one, man.
So that was for Town and Country magazine. That was in 2013. And the story was about Livingston and all the riders in Livingston. So we had, you know, we had photographed Carl Hyacin, McGuane, Peacock. And Harrison was the one that we wanted to photograph. But we kept getting told by his fixer in Livingston, hey, you can't photograph him, can't photograph him. And Amanda Fortini, which is married to Walter Kern, she was writing the story. So she was with me, and she's a really nice human being. So I started doing some research, and I go, Amanda, what kind of wine does he like? Because he's a big wine drinker, right? So we went to Livingston, and we bought the most expensive bottle of wine that he likes, right? So we finally got in touch with him. The fixer had gone. We called his house, and it was a bright, sunny day, and we go up there. And I have a picture I can show you later. I'll send it to you, Ben. But
I love it.
We put Amanda Fortini, and so he's sitting outside in the sun, in just bright sunlight. And my son was assisting me at the time, which is now a photographer, Zach Anderson. And I'm looking at this, and I go, man, how are we going to pull this off? So I have a portable Northlight studio that I travel with for portraits. So I told Zachary, I says, get the portable studio up. So it's an 8x8 cube. So we set it up. He set it up for me. And we go over there, and Amanda's sitting on his lap. And, you know, just, you know, he loves pretty women. And he starts melting. And I give him a bottle.
How dare he?
I give him a bottle of wine. And I said, you know, Mr. Harrison, would you mind if I take your photograph? He goes, oh, no problem. And that's how I got the photograph.
Man. And it's like, if you look at it, you can almost just see, like, he has his hands up smoking.
Yeah.
Pulling on a cigarette.
I don't think I shot more than 10 frames.
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, you just see that dude's life. How old was he at that point?
This was 2 years before he died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that, yeah, you can see that dude's life in that image.
Yeah. Like, it's the landscape of his life.
Yeah, yeah. His skin, his face, like.
I'll send you a print of that.
Yeah, please, man. I would happily hang that up.
You get an 8x10 glossy, me too.
Yeah. Put it right beside
you. Yeah. That's the only deal.
That's part of the deal.
Yeah.
Who's that guy? Well,
that's Mr.
Like,
Magoo.
Yeah. Like, here's a picture of your family and Jim Harrison and this other guy. Yeah. He requires a bit of an ego.
Yes.
He requires a photo of himself.
Exactly.
To be put behind any photo of Jim Harrison.
He signs photos to himself.
Yeah.
It's just weird. Yeah.
I feel like I talk about this stuff all day, but I've become a little bit of a marketing nerd, but just like interested in messaging and interested mm-hmm. in the things that we say and why we say them and being intentional in our speech and things like that. And as you guys both obviously know from your podcast, we got an issue with that. I think when I started this show some 90 mm-hmm. episodes ago, we talked about that at length. Hunting, I think, has pretty bad PR agency as a community. We really just don't have one. And
public opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've talked about that a lot in a lot of different ways. But when you guys, from your perspective, you know, Bill, and where you've been, like, how do you think about, like, our words and images and our stories and collectively what we say, have said, what we might say? I know that's a big question.
Wow.
Great question.
That's a really great question. Well, you know, we, you know, taking a step back, when we first decided to do this podcast, you know, Ian and I would spend just a lot of time, you know, we'd either, you know, we'd be fishing or hunting, sitting on, and then we call it the tailgate podcast because we kind of hang out in your truck afterwards and kind of bullshit about advertising. We, you know, it would always just turn to what, you know, hunting and angling brands are doing.
Right.
And I think it originally came in, we, you know, we came into this knowing that we've always felt that brands can do more and should do more. They always go to the you know, there's the tropes, the cliches and the trends. And, you know, I don't want to offend anybody.
Like, we're not trying to offend anybody. We're trying to help.
We're not trying to, like, you know, call people out, but it's just, we just think brands can and can do more. And they can show up in different places. They can try different strategies, talk to new audiences, you know, for growth. And we've certainly, you know, worked with folks to really pull the numbers to look just so we can back up, you know, our claims here. But, you know, as, you know, while the angling world is growing, the hunting world is shrinking.
Right.
And if you look at, and we've said this many times as well, the hunting and angling world is in and of itself a very creative industry.
Yeah.
It's all about stories. It's about adventure. It's just beautiful places. I mean, it's just built for just really great storytelling. But we just keep telling the same stories over and over and over. You know, you go to a fly fishing film festival, it's, you know, three of the films are the same.
Once you've been in the industry enough, you're just like, oh, my. Yeah.
And I say this humbly. I mean, because I've done this myself in the past for a car commercial. But, you know, if I hear it's not the destination, it's the journey. It's not the journey, it's the destination. Like, I mean, it's
there's some things,
time and again. Yeah.
There's some things that I've seen folks get celebrated for in our industry as, like, innovative thinkers. I'm like, wait a minute, that's not innovative. It's just like a normal thing that a guy might do.
Right.
And I think that really denotes some of the issues here. It's like, well, you're talking about the meat. Yep.
Whoa. Hunting is conservation.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Great.
Cool.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
How is that innovative?
Yeah.
Like, this is what we do. So
that's a good point. And so we've, you know, and I'll just say it, you know, a lot of the work and a lot of the money that brands are putting into this right now, they're just advertising the category. Like, they're doing the best thing for their competitors now by marketing it. So we just really want to inspire brands just to try new things, be more courageous in terms of really having a point of view, defining a really unique voice out there in the marketplace, you know, just really get, you know, just better storytelling. Again, we say that humbly. It's not like we're coming in saying, like, you know, thank God we're here to show you guys how to do it and gals, you know, but we just get very excited about the potential of what these brands can do.
And I think that it's important to say, like, I worked at a pretty big brand myself in the marketing category. I think it's important to categorize and really define why brand marketing is important, why brand messaging is important, why it matters to folks like me or to somebody listening. And there's a ton. We could go through that for a while. We probably should. But I think it starts by saying, like, there was a time in hunting. It's not so much now with the proliferation of social media, but there was a time in hunting where if you wanted to be an influencer before that term existed, you had to be funded by brands.
Yeah.
You know, we think about the stories of folks like Lee and Tiffany Lukoski and some of the bigger names in hunting that have since risen to some sort of stardom. They were originally sponsored by, like, hey, you know, True Grow really likes you, Scentlock really likes you. They're gonna pump you out there and make you part of their marketing. So there's a big part of our industry where brands were kind of the way to be known. Like, if a brand liked you, all of a sudden you had a chance to be known.
Right.
It's not so much that way anymore, I think, with YouTube and different platforms that are democratic in the way. But there was a time, many decades, where that's kind of what it was.
Right.
There was few editorial voices out there, print magazines and some TV shows.
Now there's an abundance of, which is great, I think.
Right. Right. But that's where, I mean, brands have real power. I worked at one where we spent millions of dollars on films and photography and content to ingratiate people to the outdoors. Mm-hmm. And that was, I mean, we still wanted to sell them coolers, but, you know, I just tended to forget that when I was doing that, or at least try to block that out so we could create good content. So I think when you guys, when you talk about these things, that's kind of, you know, a nice place to start.
Your previous brand, I mean, that you just put really meaningful work out there in the world. And it really just...
It was smart.
It was smart. It was intentional. I still think the Father's Day campaign was still one of my favorite pieces of advertising, you know, ever. And, I think we're trying to just bring a lot of the... And we've been very lucky. I feel like we've both been very, very lucky and really fortunate to just have touched a lot of really great brands. I've gotten exposure to everything from Super Bowl commercials to documentary films to Hollywood, all the good stuff. And we just would love to just bottle some of that and bring it back into the hunting and angling world, because we're just... That's what we'd, A, rather be working on anyway. But
it is what we'd rather be
working on. What we're just most passionate about. And you know, some brands that I think are doing really, really well. So we don't want to come in and say, you know, it's just a wasteland of just crap out there. But no, there's a lot of polished noise out there. I mean, we were joking about with this with Tom Rosenbauer on our podcast, but, you know, everyone has access to really great camera gear and audio equipment and all that good stuff, which I think is great. And to your point about kind of democratizing, you know, the ability to go out and make things and put it out there in the world, but without an idea or without a point of view, it's just a lot of really polished noise.
Yeah.
And I think what that does is that can really muddle the message. And I think, you know, it's, I think it's just, you know, I think it's time to just try ourselves to try to just keep pushing what's possible
to help.
From a marketing standpoint.
So we're trying to do is help.
Yeah. Well, so what are the common, like, what are some of the common failures you feel like from a messaging standpoint that you've seen? Because we, you know, I think there's a lot of eye roll situations in our industry.
I think
that
a
we
lot
all
of
do.
Kill porn, I think, is, I think we're moved past that, right? I think, you know, I what I love about what's happening now in our sport in these categories is the young people like yourself are getting involved in it, you know, and I've said this many times. I mean, you guys are much more educated than we were, much more aware where your food wants to come from. So your messaging, you were looking for serious storytelling. You know, I think you've moved past this kill porn, and I think that the majority of the people in this country have missed. And you're not doing any favors to anybody.
Well, it's a false expectation.
It is a false expectation. You
know? Yeah.
And I think that let's move past that. You can still talk about the in between moments. And still get your message apart, you know, across, right? Would you not agree, Bill?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I think that, you know, an exercise that we were talking about this too, you know, an exercise that, you know, I did at a past brand, we actually took all the work out there in the outdoor category, just blanket of the wall, I'm a big wall guy. And everything was black and white, the solo, you know, sojourner who, you know, kicked nature's ass and it's all about the win and it's just everyone trying to be really hard. And then you mirror that with, you look at how just normal people are posting and talking and sharing their experiences in the outdoors. And it's group settings. It's fun. It is those in-between moments. And when brands really tap into that, it punches through that logic gate for them. And they just see that they have that irrational kind of love and connection with your brand.
Yeah. And, you know, I worked on the God Made a Farmer commercial for the Super Bowl. So I was one of the photographers that worked on that. And I guess my point to that, they stepped outside the traditional way of telling stories in a way that was really kind of innovative and different. And I think that, think about what that could be done into the hunting and fishing world, right? Maybe talk about some of Ted Trueblood stuff or something like that. You know what I mean? I mean, come on. I mean, this is, you know, those are the guys that opened up the doors for us.
Yeah.
And just think about it in a more creative way. That's, you know, that's what gets me excited.
Yeah.
Well, I think we talked about this in terms of like, where's hunting going and how can we get more people in? I mean, there's a lot of like, more tangible on the ground ways, but in this kind of storytelling being intangible, every person with a social media account has a chance. Mm-hmm. All 10, 11 million hunters out there have a chance to be a storyteller. So if you're thinking like, I don't work at a brand, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
These are
a personal brand.
Yeah.
Sure.
These are ways to tell stories to people and ways to think about communication because like it or not, we were just talking about earlier in the podcast, a young man who put up a YouTube video where he wasn't wearing orange when he shot a deer.
Mm.
And we had a wildlife officer write in like, what should I do? It's a bit of a, seems like a nice kid. Should I write him a ticket or not? I'm like, well, he made a choice. He told the story. He made a choice to put that on YouTube.
Yeah.
And he needs to be more thoughtful about what he puts out there. And so he should be punished for that, in my opinion. So a lot of this goes back to that. Like, just how do you
accountability,
well, how you tell your story.
And just learning it and being a good representative. You know, well, first of all, don't post crime. There's that. Like, spoiler alert.
Well, but, you know, the other thing is, we talk about this all the time, Bill. I mean, I think if social media went away, I think you'd lose half the hunters.
Half the people would stop hunting.
They'd stop hunting.
Yeah.
Which, to me, is kind of sad for me, right?
Yeah.
I don't like that.
We talk about motivations, right, too, in this podcast a lot, intrinsic and extrinsic motivations. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing it for? Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Why are you posting that?
Mm-hmm.
Social media is a big video game. You get points for doing shit people like and not for doing things people don't like. And that has royally screwed up our motivations.
Yeah. Sure. Yes. That's a good point.
And so I don't know if we'll ever be able to come back from it. But we got to learn how to manage it.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier.
download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Great point. Yeah.
And so if you guys, you know, like when you're talking about storytelling and branding mm-hmm. and thinking through these things, that's, I think, some of the medicine for that yep. what ails us in that way.
And I think it's just, you know, having a... You know, knowing who you are, having that strong, unique point of view out there, and just using that as a guide for everything. I think that's where a lot of brands, I think, in, you know, again, probably sounds more provocative than I intended to be, a lot of hunting and angling brands fall short. Is they think they know who they are, but, you know, really establishing that really unique point of view, establishing that really unique voice, using that as your filtering guide for what we would do, what we would not do. And that's a good exercise to do, too. I've done that with a lot of brands, and you just try to find the edges of the company and the brand. But I think the other thing to go back to your question, too, is it's a strategy and insights. And, you know, again, to my
do the point, research.
To my point about just, you know, advertising the category, but when you there are a lot of sweeping declarations that are used to build brands today, which, and that just, you know, it creates more noise. It doesn't really have that sort of deeper trigger. And, you know, so consumers make that inductive leap in the brain and go, holy shit, I've never thought of it. It's like, let me give a better example. I use stand-up comedy. Stand-up comedy, your observational comedy is, it's an insight about something. They articulate a really unexpected way of looking at it, and it fundamentally changes the way you look at that thing forever. And that, for me, is just great branding. And mm-hmm. that you need to think about what is a really great insight about something. The fact that we're busy today, we don't get to hunt as much as we want. That's a sweeping declaration, you know. But the fact that women here know a lot, you know, no, you can't be a mom and be pretty. No, you can't go out and leave your kid at home. You know, there's so many limitations of women. And I was in a focus group with a woman. We were talking about this. She had a cathartic meltdown when we're talking about this because it really meant something to her. And I said, but, you know, what if this brand is really just all about yes and really just really hitting, you know, all the yeses in your life? And, so I think it's just trying to find that really deeper insight that, you know, is unique and is ownable.
People are yearning
really
for it.
Really differentiate you. And then you build just a strategy. How do we bring this to life? How do we just, you know, tell the story about this in various mediums?
Because it's such a rich environment. Yeah. I mean, it's so rich visually and stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. The places like this stuff has taken you. It's taken me. It's taken all of us. Yeah. It's like, come on. I feel... The reason why I wanted to do this the first place, I'm like, this thing is awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What are you people not, why is it not growing?
Yeah. Right.
Like, how could that possibly be?
Right. Well, it's our messaging.
Yeah,
well,
it's how has that been hijacked? Message.
I think it's just the elitist sort of veneer to this business. Or there is a learning curve to it, but it's not nearly as bad, you know, as I think people think. But I think it's overly aspirational. And I saw this a lot, and this is a general outdoor world, but it's overly aspirational. People can't relate to it. You know, again, not everyone's able to go on a month-long sheep hunt, you know, and not everyone's, you know, going to be able to fish the Madison, you know, and not everyone's double hauling, you know, on these big wide Western rivers and these beautiful
and
settings.
That's okay.
You know? And it's okay. And it's good to sell like the dream like that. And it's just beautiful imagery for marketing. But
it's not reality for the majority.
But if you're baking that kind of messaging in every corner of your brand, whether it's on social, whether it's in, you know, right down an email blast, how you answer the phone, it's just going to turn people off. And the younger generation, they don't, you know, again, that probably sound like, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge here, but I think there are a lot of people that just want to cut to the front of the line. We should talk about influencers and ambassadors, but there are a lot of people that just want to cut to the front of the line without really going through that. And so I think as a result, brands, you know,
I'm not doing themselves any favors.
They're not doing themselves any favors. So I think we're just you know, I think there's a tremendous opportunity in this industry to just not only in some corners of the brand, just be a more accurate representation of what it's like, but also just make sure that you're accessible and approachable so people like can see themselves in your brand.
Can we grow it?
Get excited about wanting to be part of it.
Yeah, so I think that's a good point about influencers and ambassadors. Like those I ran a whole team of those folks at Yeti, and we had to make a lot of those things. And to your point, I think we made like three sheep films, three damn sheep films at a company that sells coolers out of like maybe seven hunting films that we made.
Yeah.
You know, we certainly, that was certainly a misstep. I mean, we got away with a lot.
Right.
Because we were doing well.
Because you could.
Yeah, because we could.
You're pioneers and you're.
Yeah, we had some money. We're doing different things because it was different and new. It could be this, like, it could be non-representative of really most people. And it was laser focused on a certain idea anyway. But when you talk about influencers, ambassadors, like this is the thing that we're children with toys when it comes to like, I have 80,000 followers. What do I do? I'd like some money. Money is good. I'd like to go hunting. And then a brand steps in. It's like, now I am, again, to the point I made earlier, now you're legit because I give you, here's this piece of paper, or here, I'll put your picture on my website. That makes you legit. Now you get to sell my product, which in turn makes you more, gives you more credibility within the industry or within the community. And that's a huge problem. Like, that is a big time problem.
Yeah.
It's a egg and the chicken, not the chicken and the egg when it comes to that stuff.
What's the solution to that?
Hell, I don't know. I mean, I think, like I said, I just think we're so new at this, right? Mm. We're so new at being, everybody likes to say authentic, but we're so new at knowing shit and telling that story in the right way.
I think it's starting, the boat's starting to get righted. It's starting to happen.
I think what's good is the industry starting to suddenly self-police itself. Now there's I saw this happen in the general outdoor world where there were a lot of these hater blogs and hater feeds, which were just ushered in an era of self-hate. I'd hate to see the hunting world destroy itself from within because everyone's calling out. And I know there's a couple out there right now. Somebody sent me the other day, which are just depressing.
It's depressing.
But, I think that it's tough. I mean, who has the right to determine whether or not their point of view is the right way? And I think a lot of, some folks will say, well, I have the bigger audience or I have the most money to throw out there. I can outshout everybody. So my point of view is right. And I think a lot of big brands have been doing that. Big organizations have done that. But I think and this is just me personally now too, and Andy and I, I think share this belief, but I think it's okay. Just do it how you want to do it. Now, there's some things that are absolutely just plain stupid and illegal and just dumb. And I'm glad some of these quote influencers out there are in jail now for poaching and all that. And I think that's just symptomatic of, this industry having to always show a win, and it makes people make some really crappy decisions. But I think that...
Well, the authenticity has got to come back, man, because I feel like that...
I agree.
Was it ever there though? there with some people.
I think there was before social media was there. Definitely. I mean, people were just doing their own thing.
Yeah. When I hunted with a lot of
You hunted a long time before ever social media came up, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
It was way better.
Right. Exactly.
It was way better back then. Yeah. I had to worry about that shit.
Right.
I hunted with a lot of outdoor writers and stuff coming up. That was the game. I broke in American Hunter magazine at the NRA and then went Peterson's Hunting Magazine, and like that's a different world than the one I sit in now, or like the marketing brand world. And that world had a lot of folks who were experts, quote unquote. They had columns in these magazines, and I would be privileged enough to be in a field with them. I would say it was about 50-50 of folks who knew what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I probably have fallen into that trap myself, young in my career, and even now we're like, well, you work for a magazine, you have an editor at your title, you better write a how-to article right now,
right?
Like, well, I don't know how to do that. We'll look it up.
Yeah.
That can't be.
Right.
That can't be the way we disseminate information to each other. And so I think in very much in the same way, social media has kind of gone down that track. And it's the reverse, right? If you look a certain way, if you talk a certain way, if you play the game right, if you play the arcade game right, and you get enough points.
That's so true.
Then you get power.
Yeah.
Well, that fucking doesn't mean anything.
Just be yourself to the nth degree. But
it's hard.
But take the time to, I call it just kind of that mental homework where just take the time to sit down and think, what do I think about this? What do I think about that? Just have an informed opinion. So at the very least, and we had a guest on where we didn't necessarily agree with their opinion, but they clearly took the time to think about it.
And that's okay.
And I'm like, I don't agree with that, but I at least respect the fact that you at least have taken the time to think about that.
And civil discourse is good.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just last episode had a black professor from Vermont who wrote a book called Black Faces in White Places. And like that to me is a very challenging thing. I always like to say like it's taking my ideas to the gym and making sure I can articulate what I believe.
Yeah.
As someone who has no idea who I am, where I come from, really probably couldn't relate to me in many ways at all. but I got to find a way to relate to them. And in some ways, that's an analogous of where we are in the hunting community.
Right.
Absolutely. We have to find a way, and that's why I think you got what you guys say is useful. We have to find a way to relate to people that we've never related to before, or it's been quite a long time since we've related to them.
Because the tent is large, right?
Yeah,
and at the end of the day, there are a lot of people who are on the sidelines with a crap load of money who are going to be just as passionate as we all were growing up and coming up here. They just aren't represented. They're marginalized. But when they're in, it's just, you know, there's an economic benefit. And that's a big part of what we're about as well. It's just trying to help these brands. Listen, you don't have to change who you are. You don't have to be all things to all people, but just be who you are. But there's ways you can actually reach some of these, you know, other audiences out there to bring them in, because it's just, you know, it's just going to grow your business.
And for me, the deeper meaning, why we got involved, for me it was, and I think maybe, Ben, you can agree with this, but the more people we have included, that we include into our sport, the more eyes we have on issues that are facing us, conservation-wise, public lands, and that's what really keeps me up at night. Like, how do we get more people interested in what we do so they become advocates of what we're trying to protect? And I think that's, to me, the most important thing, why I'm just trying to help a category that I started as a photographer in, and that I really love.
Yeah.
I love it, you know? Yeah. And, you know, and I just want, we're just trying to help the place. We're not thinking we're experts, but you know, I've been doing this a long time. I've shot outside the category. I've done, you know, big campaigns that have nothing to do with fishing and hunting. And we just want to come back to it because we love it so much and just bring some of the sensibilities that we have.
The potential is unbelievable.
Right.
I mean, just in terms from a growth standpoint, just from what's possible, just from a communication standpoint, I think this industry has barely scratched the surface. I mean, there are a few ways this industry talks to itself. It's through editorial, podcasts, film festivals, and you know print, things
like
that.
Your previous employer, they broke the ground a little bit.
Yeah, no, I was in the rooms where I was like, we should do films. We're like, what do you mean by that? And and we stumbled through it, and being on the inside, you're like, man, that we waste a lot of money. But we hit on something, right? And I think part of that, what Yeti hit on and what I think about a lot nowadays is that there's, like, when you have an ethos or when you have something you love, and like I always say, hunting enriches my life. Why wouldn't I want to? I have this thing that's important to me. Why wouldn't I want to be an evangelist for it in any way I possibly can? Like, what? And everybody around me feels the same way. And so we're all like scratching and clawing up a pretty steep slope to try to get it back to where it's relevant again. And there's a lot of ways to do that. But like at Yeti, we just took like this ethos of like, I want to be outside. This thing is good for me. And there's all these people out there, yourself included, Andy, that like that exemplify that and that are that. And rather than tell people what this can do for you, let's show them what it can do for you through the stories of these people and these places and these characters that transcend not only what they do or who they are, but they transcend how a story is written. And so then you get to a point where you're like, okay. Wyman Menzer is a photographer in Texas.
Amazing.
Amazing man.
Yeah. Amazing photographer.
And one of my favorite humans. Known him for a decade or so now. And like an amazing human. Like, so if we can tell his story, is kind of a weird one in regards to hunting and trapping, because he started out, he went the other way, right? Well, let's not be scared of that story, because there's something we can learn in that. And if we're trying to come at this from just like, we want to say, we're all adventurers, we all climb mountains, and we all...
We're hard.
Look at me. This is my heavy metal face.
We sell plastic boxes, you know? It's like, what are we really going to do here? And so guys like that, I could go down the list.
That was a great film.
The thing I loved about Yeti was just the level of craft to everything. Like from a catalog to the product, like every craft is just baked into everything. I think that is another thing.
But it was in their DNA in the very beginning. They literally grabbed it and knew where they needed to go with great direction. And you guys just took and went with it.
And that's where we'd love to see brands get to that. It's just really understand what is good writing? What is great photography? What is great filmmaking? What is just great... just great comms planning.
It can't just be beautiful. It's got to tell something.
It's got to lead to something. And the other thing, too, is I see so many dead ends in the marketing and angling world in terms of marketing. I'll watch a film. I don't know what I do next. Or I don't know what to think about that. Or I don't know what to take away. And I think if there's a way to kind of connect the dots a little bit more, I think bring people into this kind of world of your brand. I think, there's a lot of the major marketers in the Fortune 100 realm they're spending a crap load of money to start doing that and really figure out what is these. And I hate to use a buzzword this early in the morning. It's only 10 o'clock. But, you know, they're building these just robust ecosystems and they're connecting everything. So when you bring a consumer in, there's always more and they can get more and then go deeper into your story. And I think that hunting and angling, you come in and you come out. And I think there's ways you can just pull people in a lot more.
Sure. And I think that at some level, like there are strategies, right? So I think the influencer thing is really interesting to me. One, because people call me that, and I think that's stupid. But
I don't feel like that at all. I feel like that you're a voice, some sage advice, and you know that can relate to people, other people in the category.
Right, and so there's this, how do we get to that? And a lot of the hate that's out there, I think, is pointed towards this idea of what is the hurdle? And mm-hmm. I agree with a lot of that. Like, I'm not going to go out there and have a hate blog or whatever.
No.
But I do agree with, like, there should be a threshold. Mm-hmm. There once was a threshold. And now, again, we're just in this new place where if you play the arcade game right and you get enough numbers, then you wield some sort of power, regardless of that power is authentic to the mm-hmm. thing that you do.
Yeah.
And a lot of us are getting lost in that. And a lot of brands are driving that, you know, like getting down the wrong path.
And it turns a lot of people off.
And it turns lots of people off.
Yeah.
Perfectly. You got a brand new hunter who we just had earlier on this podcast. We had one of our production folks in here who just shot her first deer.
Wow.
Right? And she is talking about having this moment with this deer and before she killed it. And that was like the thing she's remembering. And as I'm sitting there thinking about that, I'm like, this is the kind of story that is important, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And there's a lot of brands are like, oh, hot lady, hot chick.
Yep.
Let me make it hotter.
Yeah, it's her third hunt, but she's now an ambassador, influencer for our brand. And that happens not just mm-hmm. with females. It happens across the board.
Yeah.
And so for there to be pushback.
That's why I stopped taking my shirt off.
Yeah, no, right. I've been oiled up for weeks now.
I was like,
I'm
a thirst trap.
Nice to know that.
Did I use that term right? Yeah, my thirst trap.
Thirst traps here.
I'm a thirst trap, yeah. Look at this.
Dang it.
I think this body happens
Phil,
by itself.
Phil, are you oiled up?
I'm mountain fit.
I'm not. Do you guys have any extra I could borrow?
Phil's been photographed before wearing like Daisy Duke jeans.
That's true.
Really?
I went all out for Halloween.
Yeah,
it was good.
When you say all out,
I mean all out.
Yeah, it was...
You were hanging all out?
It was offensive to 100% of the people. But there is a version of this where there should be pushback to that. I totally understand. And people should be gut-checking mm-hmm. influence, right?
Like, yep.
You said this. Do you know what the fuck you're talking about? And so I think...
Don't shoot a deer unless you're wearing orange.
That guy. And so I think brands...
Tough. And don't try to be hard, because it's not about being hard. It's about being authentic and honest.
It's like, I
don't
think...
And have fun.
And I don't think you're ever going to be yourself on social media, because you're just curating yourself. Like,
right.
In your life, you don't get to curate the moments. You just go through and people interact with
Good
you
point.
And they pick that up, right? Yeah. Social media is a curation however you decide to it. So when you... Understanding that it's a decision-making process, you must... treat it like that. You must think like, what do I want to do? What can I do? If I find myself with a bunch of people listening to what I say, holy shit, now I can't just take a bunch of money.
Right.
So like,
right.
Whoops, drop my bow. I'll pick it up.
Yeah.
Oh, drop my arrows.
Yep.
Drop my Easton arrows.
Hold on, I'm mountain fit. I'm going to take pictures of my post shower.
Yeah, there's this thing that goes on. And I've got a lot of friends who have lots of followers, and I give them shit all the time, and they give me shit all the time.
Yeah.
And, like, we're gut checking each other on like, you know,
that's good.
Is this what you really ought to be doing? And I think that's
useful,
the proper way to handle it.
Yeah, like, I agree.
In social media, people can strip away the
holding up spawned out fish, salmon, after you've walked across the salmon.
Yeah, walked across the beds,
You know, is probably not a good idea.
And holding by the gills is probably a bad idea, too.
Yeah. And there is a thing that happens, too, that where there's a person who's got the hate blog, and they're like, it would be like if a TV critic was only watching the Jersey Shore. Like, well, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I can find TV that sucks.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of TV out there that doesn't suck.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's up to, you know, the social media consumer and in the brand space of the consumer themselves to kind of like up their game.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody that's listening here that buys shit, think twice before you buy something and somebody tells you to do it and try to come up with a better way.
And I think too, transparency, you know, if it's a paid post, just be honest about it. It's okay. People are going to give you plenty of runway there, but you know, I think greater transparency. I know you're supposed to put ads on there, but, you know, not a lot of folks do.
And, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there folks are, you know, a larger brand like us that has a lot of, like, people surrounding it. I mean, we get attention in that way. Yeah. The FTC is looking at it like, hey, what are you doing? When are you doing it? What's the relationship here?
Yeah.
So you got to know those things. But at the end of the day, you know, you try to bring this back to folks that are listening that have never sat in like the marketing chair or the storytelling chair. This is about as an important conversation as you can have just because of where we are. There's 11 million. I mean, hunting peaked in the 80s. Ever since then, we've been just kind of riding this precipitous slide. And
well, you know, I like to use the word coloring of America. It's changed, right? So we're not talking to the people that are not white, right? So we're not including those people into our sport. We should be welcoming everybody, right?
Well, in fact, even it's taken this long for for quote unquote women to have more of a voice, right?
Women, I think, are struggling with that now. Like, and we as a community are struggling, like, not tokenizing, not doing things where it's like not pandering and generalizing their motivations, being like, she's a woman, she looks cool.
Yeah, look, it's a woman doing things men do. Like, right. I'm so glad we're past that shit.
So now we're in this zone where we're trying to, like, it's all the same, but now we're trying to fight against, just because you're a woman and you're doing it, or because you're a black guy and you're doing it, do you deserve the attention? Or are you a legit female or a legit African-American guy? And we'll fight through that for a time. We'll get over that and we'll get on to the next problem. But we are definitely there. In the last podcast, we talked about that. Like, what the hell do we do with this? This is a very nervous time, right? Because we want females to come in. We want people of all shapes and sizes to come in. But we don't want to, like, and brands do this all the time. Like, here's a person who happens to be black and is a angler. Let's do a film about them and let's not really think it through. That happens.
Right. Look beautiful, but there's no story.
Yeah. What's the phrase, like, value broadcasting, whatever it is? It's just like, it's just
virtue signaling.
Virtue signaling or value washing. And consumers will call bullshit. I think that's the thing. Just brands need to give consumers a lot more credit. Yeah. They will call bullshit. They will call bullshit on you with that. So just be really intentional and be honest about why you're doing it.
Why can't a brand call bullshit on themselves every once in a while, too?
For sure.
I would call bullshit on myself for the last podcast where I was congratulating myself for being brave to talk to the black lady about hunting.
Right.
I was like, God, I'm real brave.
Yeah.
What a courageous individual.
Right.
I am the best.
Yeah.
I am virtuous. And that, to me, like, after I listen back to some of it, I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Well, if you can laugh at yourself, you can live to be 150.
But you're also, aware of that, and you're honest with yourself. So that's important.
Like, boy. But I was probably just me filling time because I was like, I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad we're perfect, Andy. I'm so glad our podcasts are perfect.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we don't make any mistakes.
We're so good at it.
Well, I mean, when you've reached perfection, it's good to acknowledge.
Right, exactly. Well, we're not there yet.
Yeah, perfect mind, perfect body.
These velvet pipes that I have,
Wow, that's good. I think that all of this, this is the thing that I'm into. I don't, like, people know me, like we were talking about before. When I'm not going to be like, the 30-06 versus the 308.
Yeah.
I understand what that means, and I know that's, like, the traditional way that hunters communicate with each other. Like, it used to be that, back when I broke in, it was kind of like,
why people get into cars.
It's like, do you know how to write this? I'm like, no. Well, then you can't. I'm like, what if I just do, when I first broke in, I'm like, well, can I write a profile about this person? Can I go to Louisiana and hang out with the gator hunter guys and write a story about them? Like, that's kind of where I always came to it. But there was an establishment early on in my career that was like, well, sure, but you also have to do this. You got to write the bullet profile. And I'm like, no, I want to know that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm shirking that kind of, like, almost responsibility as a hunter to know that shit, but there's other conversations that
absolutely
just traditionally weren't had because I grew up watching, DVDs of probably tapes of like 15 bucks in 1 hour. And that's what it was. Right.
Yep.
I'm like, why can't I have 16 bucks? Maybe 17 bucks.
Right.
And that's what it was to me. It was like, this is it. If you want to be a famous hunter man, you got to, or woman, you have to kill lots of big bucks. And that warps the young mind.
Yeah, there was a school for a while.
As a kid in Florida
growing
up, I used to watch Bill Dance and the hunting, the fishing hole that stuff. So as a kid, I grew up bass fishing. And I used to watch the Bill Dance show, and I actually, in my head, I used to go, there's got to be a scuba man down there hooking these fish up to these fishing rods, because it's never like that for me, right?
Yeah.
It's never like that for me.
I'm like, Dad, we've hunted for 3 days. We've killed zero bucks. Where are the 15
bucks? There's a buck behind every tree.
Yeah,
in the woods.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you got to, like, then it gets into, like, what is repeated, right? Within those 15 clips, what is repeated? Okay, the big bucks are repeated, but also the celebrations are repeated. also, like, and so I started to then, and I've seen this in other young folks.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I started to worry about what my celebration might be like if someone was ever filming me, because I saw
it's heavy,
you know, a lot of people doing different things. And so all that skews it a little bit, and it skewed it for decades. And now we're, I think we've adjusted a little bit to social media, a little bit better than when I was first looking at it.
Yeah.
I think we're more thoughtful than we were maybe
we're past the really bad shilly phase, I hope. You know, I mean, you look at half the, you know, older.
It's getting better.
Honey shows where it's people whispering in a blind going, I'm here with my Bowtech bow. I'm putting on my my True Glow.
And then they have the call outs on the bottom.
It was like they were like reading a catalog out loud.
Everything they're wearing is like,
okay. Yeah.
That's why, like, that goes back to what you guys are doing. Like, brands matter. Like, they've mattered in hunting for all the time that those connections have been made. And they have had major influence on who and what is talked about and who is popular and why.
And before people come in, yeah, I agree. And, you know, and brand, for a lot of folks, advertising is the first entry point for a lot of people into this realm. And I think that brands, you know, do have a responsibility to really be intentional, really be thoughtful about what they're putting out there. Because before they start even going to books, before they start going to films, you know, they see advertising. And they either relate to it and say, I want to be that, do that. And advertising, you know, and you certainly are at ground zero for that. But, you know, advertising says how you should act, how you should think, what you should wear. You know, do you have a beard? Do you not have a beard? You know, what kind of brim do you need on your hat? Like, people watch that. You know, I remember working on Arctic Cat snowmobiles, and just we used to watch people read catalogs and watch how deep they would get into. They could tell whether they're cantering an engine. They could tell just the different seat, you know, profile. They would get into those, into the minutia there. And I think a lot of people, you know, do that with advertising. So I think, you know, just the more intentional they are, the better. So
we have a lot of diversity here at Meat Eater. We have diversity of facial hair. We have a lot of white dudes with different types. One has a mustache.
I like that.
Two or three of us have beards. It's a diverse place.
Yeah, sure.
Phil is cleanly shaven.
Yeah,
yeah, fresh. You lost.
You guys don't know about. Yeah,
is it in a glass case somewhere?
I didn't know you were aware of the stash. No, I'm sorry.
I'm a fan.
Should have kept it.
Skimpy McWeek stash.
Yes.
Did you just like take? Harley did you like? Is it like? Did you dip it in
gold,
bronze, or gold,
don't,
or anything?
Don't
I think a lot of Ben's listeners would have appreciated that, but I was happy to just let it wash down the sink.
Don't answer him.
You didn't just like burn it and open a wormhole in the space-time continuum.
Man, I should have thought this through.
Yes, hey,
dang.
See ideas. It's like
he didn't really tell me. Yeah, we had one guy write in that called Phil a murderer. He murdered his own.
It's a pet, right? Because, you know, you can't feed it.
We named it, yep.
Gary.
Uh-huh.
Gary was the name of your mustache. It was a terrible mustache, man. It really was. All right, well, you guys got to get out of here, but thank you so much for coming in, and check out the Tailgate Podcast. I'm sure it's everywhere.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. We really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no, it's a great conversation, and having been in the industry, like, it's not just an insular thing we do if we work in this place, man. It means a lot to a lot of people, so it's important.
Yep.
All right, thanks,
well,
boys.
Thank you.
See ya.
I guess I grew up on an older road.
That's it. That's all. Another Hunting Collective coming at you, number 90. We're into December. The year's almost over. The hunting, big game hunting year is coming to a close, because we are, you'll see this week we're in Nebraska hunting whitetails on public land with our muzzleloaders. But after that, Phil, I'm having a kid.
I know. I don't think we haven't talked about it that much.
We haven't talked about that. I'm bringing it up now because we're going to have to do something during the time where my child is born where I'm not podcasting.
Star Wars podcast.
Nope.
Episode.
Oh, nope. Okay. You're fired. We got to do something. This podcast was great, so thanks to Andy and Bill and Joe and Maggie. But we're going to have to do something. So maybe we can do like a best of, or we can just play on a loop Barry Gilbert threatening to leave. any of those two options would be just fine with me. So if you want to write into thc@themeateater.com with some strategies of what we might do during my time off to rear my child, bring my child into this world, whatever people say, I would appreciate that, because I need some ideas. We're gonna have like maybe 2 or 3 weeks where I'll be off of work, probably don't want to come in here, sit in this room with you, Phil, even though I'm starting to become fond of you.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, you're breaking in. Anything else? You got anything else? You want to sing me happy birthday or?
Not particularly. I'm just excited. I'm excited for you. It's your birthday. You're having a kid.
Yeah.
You're going home.
Yep.
This.
Yeah, man.
Pretty soon.
It's going to be a big deal.
Visiting
family, celebrating the holidays. I'm looking forward to buying lots of consumer products during the month of December, which is what I normally do. And what you should be doing, according to most things. Santa and all that. So anyway, that's it. Buy some consumer products. Bye. Stay here too long, 'cause I can't go a week without doing wrong. Oh, without doing wrong. Without doing wrong. Oh, without doing wrong. Drinking in heaven. Sitting as the boss who starts to grow roots. I'm feeling like an old worn out pair of shoes. Oh, tell me what is it that I should do? You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.